Dr. Stückelberger, can you hear us?
Ja, ich kann doch ein wenig Deutsch sprechen, aber es ist nicht gut für meine Wissenschaft. So, ich kann verstehen, ja. Und, aber es ist viel besser auf Englisch.
Okay, let's
speak English. Mein Vorvater war Basler. So.
Oh, that's why. So.
Yes, and my mother is Norwegian, so I'm a mix.
Aha. Can you tell us what you do? What is your background?
Ja,
Frau Behrendt, Sie bleiben noch drin, weil ich könnte mir vorstellen, dass das für beide Seiten interessant ist. Okay.
Yes, I've been my whole life a scientist, actually, so health scientist. I started in biology, then I have a complicated CV, as many women who survive in the academic world, but mainly I've been doing research and training, teaching my whole life. But more so, more and more, since very early on, I was in WHO doing my master's degree on mental health differential in diagnosis, cross-cultural diagnosis, which I even posted on my website. And then I was taken in a geriatric unit with WHO collaborative studies and the Hospital of Geneva, Switzerland, to do research. And research was always and more for political decisions. So since the 90s, I've been deputy director of the Swiss National Program on Aging, 12 million francs, and we had to do science for politics, for politicians, decision-making and for the people. And then I was also, deputy director at the same time for the Interdisciplinary Center of Gerontology Geriatrics. So my first part of life with a lot on aging, the life course, health, differential men, women, a lot of multidisciplinary factors. And I was paid by the Faculty of Medicine, although I started in psychology, then I went to medicine very quickly. So I did a PhD on population, aging, health, subjective versus objective health, on a big cohort. And that I did in 2000. And then I did a lot of, in the aging, because of my positions, I collaborated very quickly with WHO. Mm-hmm. We created an international network on aging. And this is how I have to explain this, because this is how I understood how more and more how the United Nations works, how WHO works. Since 1994, I was expert there, taken as a rapporteur, a young rapporteur, speaking all those languages. And then the politicians started to ask me to do events, and I organized twice the UN Open Days. Mm-hmm. As a good Germanic, you organize well things. So that was my first part of life. I got a prize from Kofi Annan for doing so much work in science for politicians, science for people. Then the second part was from 2000 on in public health. And this is where I started more and more to be in WHO in the capacity of on the research ethics committee for 4 years. I have all the credentials, so no conflict of interest, everything. And then what happened in this courses where I was teaching public health, actually my PhD, I have always been on public health. It's just not a topic that is recognized academically. You have to know that. Mm-hmm. It's starting now. So the Geneva University asked me to take a mandate with WHO because I was so involved with the United Nations. And I did that, and it was on international health regulation. And that was in 2009. Mm-hmm. And it was a very interesting mandate. So I was collaborating closely with WHO Lyon, the education program, and WHO Geneva, because I know everybody in the alert and response unit. So it is linked to what I will tell you after, so I'll go quickly through that. What is interesting in what I'm gonna say is I've experimented the will to stop training people on preparedness plan, because we did an implementation program for 3 years with Georgetown University, Pretoria, and me for the University of Geneva. It was, the whole international health regulation is to prepare countries and member states to be ready for a pandemic, to prevent a pandemic, and to act quickly and readily. Mm-hmm. So the aim then I thought was very noble and very good. And I said, you know, I helped WHO Europe to also do preparedness plan for the Eastern Bloc during a workshop. I have all the documents, I have everything. And then we won the renewal of the mandate of 3 years in 2013. And suddenly they announced that there is no fund. Japan has not paid for that. When we had not trained all the regions at all, we had trained part of Africa, part of Saudi Arabia, the Middle East, Europe part, America part, but it was definitely not, and I always said we should do a publication of training, and they never did. I did one for ethics. So I saw there that there is something wrong already. Then I started teaching this in the University of Geneva on the Global Health and Human Rights Summer School that I organized with colleagues, and I was in charge of the International Health Regulation Week, which I was doing. And WHO, Bruce Plotkin, a lawyer who was working on the international regulation in WHO, came to tell me that I cannot teach this. And I told him, who are you to tell me what I can teach or not? And we had a lunch in WHO that was quite muscly, because I said, it's my right to teach whatever I want, and I don't understand why you don't teach this. Anyway, so that is the context. So I've been teaching that, and I was involved also with the European Union, and I have a lot of expertise in the international world. So that's where I am now. And if I come to you, I have more to say, but I want to go to the topic. So
let me try and briefly translate what you're saying.
Thank
also,
you.
Sie hat einen umfassenden wissenschaftlichen Hintergrund, viel mit Bevölkerungsalterung, Aging hat sie sich befasst, auch unter anderem an der Universität in Genf. Irgendwann hat sie angefangen, da gab es eine Kooperation mit der WHO oder es wurde ihnen empfohlen, mit der WHO zusammenzuarbeiten. Correct? Ja.
Ja,
okay.
Ja, genau.
Und da ging es dann ab 2000 um Public Health. Und da ist auch Ihr Doktortitel. Aus dem Bereich kommt der PhD, ja?
Ja, PhD. Und dann ein Privatdozent auch in 2014.
Okay.
Aber das war nachher, ich wollte Professor sein. Aber
ja, verstehe.
Die wollten mich nicht.
Ja, das kann ich nachvollziehen. Und seit 2009 sind Sie verschärft auch mit den International Health Regulations befasst, über die wir jetzt gerade eben auch gesprochen haben, die hier offenbar, das war uns so nicht bewusst, einen großen, wichtigen Schlüssel für die Beendigung dessen, was uns hier gerade bedrängt, gefunden haben. Ich habe dann nicht ganz verstanden, was ist in 2013 passiert? What happened in 2013?
Okay, ich sage es auf Englisch, für das richtig zu sagen. The International Health Regulation was adopted in 2005, but implemented and come into force in 2008.
Aha.
And from 2008, they wanted to do implementation training for all the regions.
Yes. Ah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. In particular, when I see it in the context of what Frau Behrendt just told us. Okay, also, diese...
She has a question.
Could I just...
Yeah, go ahead.
Should I talk English or German?
Of course, speak English.
What you want. Because what I did not mention previously was that I also did country missions for the IHR Secretariat, and also know Bruce Plotkin's.
Oh, you know him.
I worked there as well and did some guidance issues and things. So I think we have to speak to each other.
Okay, great. You know them.
And probably not so great as far as I can tell from your both of your reactions. You don't really think that he's such a great person, right?
No, not at all.
Okay. Who does he work for?
A government that is higher than... WHO.
Which one is that? The United States?
Maybe it's if we will go into that, I have things to tell you, because Switzerland is the center, and I speak that as a Norwegian. Mm-hmm. It's the center of a lot of corruption, because there we have one of the most important NGO. It's Gavi, the Global Alliance for Vaccine Initiative, which the foundation Bill Gates has.
Yeah.
Which has, I tell you, I have the papers, total immunity. Total. They can do child trafficking. They can do whatever they want. The police cannot come and look into their computer.
Before we go into that, let me explain this particular angle of this whole thing. Yeah. Also, in 2005 sollten diese Public Health Regulations, diese geänderten, die gab es ja schon in anderer Form, hatte uns Frau Dr. Behrendt erzählt, seit 1850, aber die jetzt angepassten, geänderten Public Health Regulations in Kraft treten und sie waren unter anderem dafür da, darüber zu unterrichten.
Ja, zu die Implementation, wie sagt man das?
Die Umsetzung.
Umsetzung. So, ja, die Umsetzung war von 2009 zum Ende, zum jetzt, aber in 2012, wir haben ein Mandat fertig gemacht und dann in 2013, sie haben gesagt, ja, wir machen das nochmal. Sie sind eine sehr gute Gruppe mit Georgetown und Pretoria Universität. So, wir nehmen an.
Und plötzlich war kein Geld mehr da, angeblich, weil die Japaner nichts gezahlt hatten. Und plötzlich wurde diese ganze Umsetzung beendet. Das heißt, die Regeln gibt es, aber niemand weiß, wie sie zu benutzen sind. Außer, the only person who knows how to deal with these regulations is Wieler, probably. Who is using them and abusing them as he likes or as the people who tell him like.
Who?
Wieler, the guy who runs the German RKI, the equivalent of the American CDC. We just learned that he is in charge of this statement of the 148th Executive Board by the chair of the review on the evaluation of IHR. That's it, right. He's in charge. The German, nobody knows him outside of Germany, but he's in charge and he has a responsible position. Also wir haben jetzt eben gerade gelernt, und das ist wichtig, bevor wir dann in die Details ans Eingemachte gehen von jemandem, der in der WHO sich offenbar recht gut auskennt, dass die Umsetzung dieser internationalen Health Regulations, dieser internationalen Gesundheitsregeln, dazu muss man den Leuten, die diese Regeln umsetzen wollen, natürlich beibringen, wie es funktioniert. Das stoppte plötzlich in 2013. Da wurde ihr von einem Menschen namens Bruce Plotkin gesagt, dass sie das nicht mehr weiter unterrichten darf, dass sie darüber nicht mehr weiter aufklären darf. Und wir haben eben an der Reaktion von Frau Dr. Behrendt gehört, dass sie auch eine wenig gute Erinnerung und Meinung von diesem Mann hat. Okay, let's continue.
Das ist ein bisschen anders. Er ist der Jurist dieser internationalen, dieses Sekretariats der internationalen Gesundheitsvorschriften und ist aber schon in Pension gegangen.
Ja. Okay.
War er immer da oder ich habe ihm nie gehört, seinen Namen?
Ich habe mit ihm zusammengearbeitet.
In WHO oder in Deutschland?
WHO. Und meines Erachtens ist er vor 2014, 15 in Pension gegangen. Aber
okay.
Okay.
Das ist interessant.
Tell us more.
So that is the situation. And when the pandemic happened, what they say is pandemic. I was in South Korea for a big meeting, and I realized there is something not right and not corresponding to the international health regulation when I traveled back. And I think this is very weird. The news says one thing and people don't behave the same in the airports. So I started to look and I realized over this whole year, all the breaches compared to the international health regulation and the preparedness plan. And I'm working now for a lawyer in Quebec, who's called Dominique Desjarlais. You know, I organized the Stockholm Peace Summit post-COVID where I invited you and you couldn't come. And he was there with two other lawyers, Rocco Galati and Maître Brouza for France. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think we will solve this public health problem and population economic problem without lawyers. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. So what I'm doing now with Maître Desjarlais, I'm finding out a bit more, and it's not his biggest angle, but I have 4 points I can talk to you about. Mm-hmm. First, but you know, as Sylvia is there, she's great because she can confirm and just compliment. First, that this obligation is signed by 194 member states, but it is embedded in the constitution of WHO. So they don't need to adopt it. It is immediately approved and it's an obligation. So it is legally binding.
Which
directly.
One? What, the international health regulations or what?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the international. And this is the trick, because nobody knows this. It's in the papers. It's, but you have to go and dig, and it's what, you know, it's, that's what I'm finding out. You have to go and dig mm-hmm. the inconsistencies of everything they're doing to see that they are directing as a corporate agency, WHO. Because on the on behalf of the health security of the international health regulation, they have made a third edition, because the 2005 edition is the second edition. The first one was in 1969. Mm-hmm. But the booklet of 2005, you know, I don't know if you've seen it. Or the booklet, this one, you see, is 2005, but it's written second edition. And the third edition comes, I saw just now, in 2014, would enter into force in 2016. Mm-hmm. And this has made the health security a dictatorship, where a director general can decide on his own to sell vaccines, to sell the PCR instead of all the documents that say you have to have a confirmation of a clinical and of there are other tests than PCR. So I'm finding out some inconsistencies that have not been used at all in law. So the first one is this, it's an obligation. So if it's an obligation, what Tedros, I'll call him Tedros, says, this Secretary General terrorist in WHO, when he says something, all the countries have to obey under law.
All the member states of the WHO, everyone yes. who signed the agreement with the WHO, because automatically, because as you're saying, this is part of the constitution of the WHO, this is binding law for everyone who's a member of the WHO.
Right.
Okay.
With two reservations. There are two countries, because I was teaching that, so I know. No, there were two countries in 2009, in the second edition, that made reservations. And it's very interesting. It's the USA and it is Iran. Uh-huh. They don't want to obey to WHO completely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, also diese internationalen Gesundheitsregeln sind rechtlich verbindlich, ohne weiteres rechtlich verbindlich für alle Mitgliedstaaten. Das hat uns auch Frau Behrendt eben schon gesagt. Für die, ich glaube, 143 Mitgliedstaaten nur zwei Länder gibt es, die sich da gewisse Vorbehalte ausbedungen haben, nämlich die USA und der Iran.
Mhm. Ja.
And you're saying, what about this immunity that you just mentioned for Bill and Melinda Gates for the Bill and
yeah.
Melinda Gates Foundation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can tell you more afterwards about this, but let me just finish something yeah. here. The 2016 third edition, mm-hmm. what happened in WHO, but maybe Sylvia, you were there when it happened. Bill Gates was already around. He was already, you know, mingling, saying that he pays so much money, but he became visible when, I think it was in 2017, or you correct me, mm-hmm. that he... I know this through my colleagues there. He requested to be part of the executive board of WHO like a member state.
Ah.
And it's incredible. I said, how can he dare to do this? And they went to the vote. The executive board meets every January. So, and it changes every year. And the lobby, they tried to lobby the countries. Of course, he tried to bribe. But it's really an event, because it is not mentioned. Maybe we can get the minutes of the executive board. They even accepted that he would be considered as a member state because of the money he gives. So this is unprecedented in a constitution of member states.
Is he now being considered as a member state?
Not officially,
but
not that I know. Maybe
but
there are documents.
Officially, yes, and that's probably because of the because that's why he has this immunity, right?
He has total immunity in Switzerland.
Okay, hang on. Also, Bill Gates, der schon seit geraumer Zeit da herumlungerte und offenbar versucht hat, mit seinem Geld da auch Macht zu kriegen, hat in 2017, so sagt es Frau Stückelberger gerade, den Antrag gestellt, nachdem er da erst noch eine Weile rumlobbyiert hat, in das Executive Board wie ein Mitgliedstaat der WHO in das Executive Board aufgenommen zu werden. Die haben das sogar offiziell diskutiert. Was daraus geworden ist, wissen wir nicht. Offiziell wird er nicht behandelt oder seine Stiftung nicht behandelt wie ein Member State, aber inoffiziell, unofficially, he probably holds that kind of status, right?
Yeah, yeah. I can tell you why it is very suspicious is because I think he has done something with every member state, the same contracts. What I found out with Swissmedic is the FDA of Switzerland, mm-hmm. is because I gave the paper to a journalist and now I don't even find it. I can't find it again. The Swissmedic has signed a contract with Bill Gates and WHO.
Aha.
And this is abnormal.
So basically he literally tried to lobby himself into the WHO as a member state to basically found the country of Bilgatistan. That's basically what he did. I mean, at that point he would have been basically a one-man country.
Yes, he could be a dictator because he can influence the... But the fact that he was not accepted by vote, that's why the minutes would be very interesting. By vote to be a member state, mm-hmm. He then started to sign papers for countries. That's my hypothesis, because he did it with Swissmedic. So WHO, Bill Gates, and the country in charge of accrediting treatments and vaccination are signing contracts.
He didn't get in official capacity. He didn't get voted in. So then he tried to circumvent that and just basically went around the middleman.
Well, yeah, how can you, if your country, sign a contract between three signatures, Bill Gates, a country, and WHO? Because WHO signs with countries, but not, and even that I find pretty weird. You know, why does WHO have to sign with a country an agreement? I don't know. You see, this is a corporate agency doing that, but not WHO. I mean, correct me, Sylvia, but WHO accepts to have a private company selling a merchant signing together the three to make the surveillance and to choose the medication. I think that, you know, Swissmedic had posted it on the website. I think that every country, that's my hypothesis, they have done this everywhere. That's why everybody says the same thing in the train, the same message. Every week there's the same thing happening.
Also Sie gehen davon aus, dass das, was Sie bei Swissmedic sehen können, auf allen anderen staatlichen Ebenen ebenso passiert ist. Und damit ich es jetzt richtig übersetze, also er hat versucht, in 2017 offiziell behandelt zu werden, er selbst oder seine Stiftung wahrscheinlich, ne? Die Bill und Melinda.
No, als ein Member State.
Ja, ja. Dass er oder...
Mit Gavi, ich glaube, vielleicht mit Gavi, nicht die Foundation.
Okay.
Weil Gavi hat ein NGO accredited to the WHO.
Verstehe. Also dann eben Gavi, die von ihm gegründete Impfnummer, versucht, die WHO dazu zu bringen, die WHO-Mitgliedstaaten, also diese 143 Mitgliedstaaten dazu zu bringen, ihn bzw. Gavi, die als NGO anerkannt ist, dazu zu bringen, das so zu behandeln, als sei es ein souveräner Mitgliedstaat, also ein Mannstaat. Hat aber nicht geklappt. Es gibt eine Abstimmung darüber. Und Frau Stückelberger sagt, es wäre interessant, das Protokoll darüber zu sehen, ne, weil daran kann man ja dann erkennen, wer wie argumentiert hat im Rahmen der Abstimmung. Aber es hat nicht geklappt. Aber inoffiziell hat es eben trotzdem geklappt, weil seither offenbar die WHO vertragliche Regelungen mit Einzelstaaten, aber eben auch immer mit Bill Gates auf der Seite der Einzelstaaten macht. Ne? Sodass er oder Gavi eine wahrscheinlich entscheidende Rolle spielen. Und so sagen Sie jedenfalls gerade, erklärt sich auch, dass das Verhalten der Mitgliedsländer der WHO überall nach dem gleichen Lockstep-Konzept abläuft.
Ja. Ja. Mhm. Und das ist wirklich groß Conflict of Interest.
Ja. Ja. Und wissen wir, kennen wir diese Verträge? Sind die veröffentlicht oder wissen Sie das jetzt nur aus irgendwelchen anderen Quellen? Was ist diesen dreiseitigen Vertrag zwischen WHO und dem Land? Und
ja, ich glaube, ich kann das finden mit Swissmedics. Mhm.
Das wäre sehr interessant.
Ich kann das probieren. Ja, weil ich weiß, es war auf dem Website, aber jetzt ist es nicht mehr. Ich muss das, vielleicht ist es versteckt.
Und diese, und kommen Sie nochmal zurück. Tell us more about this immunity. How does this work?
I can find again the document. It's mm-hmm. also in German, because Switzerland is also in German. And you can have a look. It's shocking. It's the normally NGOs, because I have been an NGO and I'm an NGO activist with academics in the UN since 20 years. Mm-hmm. An NGO has a status of accreditation to the United Nations. Mm-hmm. You can come and speak, you're an observer, but you cannot intervene in many things. And you don't have immunity. If you open an office, mm-hmm. you are submitted to taxation. Mm-hmm. Gavi has no taxes to pay. This is very strange. Switzerland is hosting an NGO international who doesn't pay taxes and who has total immunity. There are clauses in there. You can just read them. I will find it for you. The police cannot come and take a computer. If there is a criminal problem in the office, the police cannot get in.
So they're criminally immune.
Yes,
immune from any criminal sanctions.
I just looked it up. They have qualified diplomatic immunity.
Aha.
Within their area of operations
since. What's the name?
I think they have qualified diplomatic immunity, and they don't pay taxes since 2009. I just looked it up. They ratified a law in Switzerland in 2009.
Also mit anderen Worten, die haben schon qualifizierte diplomatische Immunität, wie der Kollege Dr. Hoffmann gerade festgestellt hat, seit 2009. Seit 2009 schleichen die da schon durchs Gebüsch. Und in 2017 haben sie dann, nachdem offenbar aus ihrer Sicht alles schön vorbereitet war, haben sie versucht, den Antrag zu stellen, jetzt auch noch als quasi souveräner Staat behandelt zu werden. Das hat aber glücklicherweise nicht geklappt. Aber nur nach außen hin nicht, denn nach innen hin werden sie ja so behandelt, wenn ich sie richtig verstanden habe, Frau Stückelberger. Das ist ja ziemlich unglaublich.
Ja, ja. Und niemand weiß das.
Ja.
So, I don't know how many.
Also sie zahlen keine Steuern und sie sind frei von strafrechtlicher Verfolgung. Man kann keine Beschlagnahmen durchführen. Die könnten also jetzt Drogendeals machen, was sie ja tun. Trotzdem ist es nicht möglich, für die Polizei, für die Staatsanwaltschaft da einzumarschieren, Computer zu beschlagnahmen und so weiter.
Mhm. Ja, und sie können Organ Trafficking, sie können die Banken, alles immune zu sein. Die können wirklich furchtbar machen.
Genau, darf ich das nochmal bestätigen, das weiß ich auch alles. Und das ist auch Untersuchungsgegenstand dieser Shared Responsibilities Untersuchung.
Sehr gut.
Von daher weiß ich das nämlich, dass die es aufgenommen hat. Das ist von 2014 die Arbeit. Also wie gesagt, ich kann das nur bestätigen, was sie auch sagen. Das stimmt perfekt. Super. So, danke.
I just looked it up, because you just said nobody knows about that. It's actually even published on Wikipedia.
Yeah, but people don't know it because nobody cares. Because obviously,
that's the thing. Nobody cares.
Nobody. It's in the details. We don't even think that it's possible.
Yes, exactly.
As citizens.
That's why we're not thinking about that. That's why we're not thinking about where is the basis for all this. Because we simply accept what is being told. And now we're going to start thinking, and I think many more people are going to start thinking, because this is extremely important information. Everything is out there in the open, but most people don't want to see it because they don't believe that that can be possible.
And I mean, it's not about saying that anyone's doing, you know, running around harvesting organs from African children or something like that, something horrible like that. Nobody's claiming that Bill Gates is doing that or anyone is doing that.
But he could.
that's the problem. We as a society should ask ourselves, should we endow any single person or any conglomerate of persons with such incredible amount of power without any kind of democratic responsibility and legitimacy behind themselves? Yeah. That's the question we should ask ourselves. Not if somebody's going to abuse that power, because the abuse is inevitable. As soon as somebody has this kind of power, they're going to abuse it. Not today, not tomorrow, but eventually they're going to abuse it, because simply because they can.
Mm-hmm. But why them and not us? You know, I have NGOs. Why can they do it and not another NGO? This is the question. Yeah.
And also there's a difference with like a normal diplomatic immunity, because this is usually these people come and they just whatever, you know, work on relationships, and maybe they have a speeding ticket or I don't know. I mean, yeah, of course, they
some kind of political legitimacy.
Also, yeah.
But not in this case. Nobody ever voted for him.
So someone comes into another country and has like total immunity also for like all business transactions and all that. I mean, that is really, that's crazy. But it's absolutely
crazy. They have less immunity than Bill Gates. Apparently, that's my friends telling me. So maybe you know more, but the diplomats don't have a total immunity.
No, they don't.
Also, das müssen wir kurz übersetzen. Es ist so weit gekommen, dass die Gavi Foundation, Bill und Melinda Gates, jedenfalls die Gavi Foundation, offenbar völlige Immunität hat. Sie muss keine Steuern zahlen, sie kann strafrechtlich nicht verfolgt werden. Eins muss man allerdings ergänzen. Niemand in keinem zivilisierten Land dieser Welt ist sicher vor der strafrechtlichen und zivilrechtlichen Inanspruchnahme wegen vorsätzlicher Taten. Und mit denen haben wir es ja hier zu tun. Also da kommt man so oder so ran. Nur es ist schon sehr erstaunlich, der Kollege Dr. Hoffmann weist da gerade darauf hin, dass überhaupt jemand in eine solche Machtposition gelangen kann. Frau Lengsfeld, kommen Sie bitte rein, nehmen Sie Platz. Ganz wunderbar. Hallo. Ja, gerne. Dass überhaupt jemand in eine solche Position mit so viel Macht gelangen kann, denn er weist völlig zu Recht darauf hin, wer so solche Macht hat, wird sie immer missbrauchen. Und was hier gerade geschieht, ist ja der eklatanteste Missbrauch von Macht, den wir uns überhaupt vorstellen können.
I mean, we have encountered a similar revelation when we were dabbling with European agencies. We found out that in the national regulations about, for example, the European Central Bank in Frankfurt, They have literal diplomatic immunity, and there is no regulation to lift it. So the head of the European Central Bank, for example, if he says I don't want any kind of seizure of my computers or I don't want the police in here, they can't go in. Yeah. It literally says that in the law. When he says no, they can't do it.
Yeah.
And that's basically the same for every European agency. And there are no regulations in place. Who would be responsible to lift that immunity? It's not even conceptually possible to do that. And here it's the same, but at least with European agencies, you have at least some kind of democracy behind it. And here it's just, well, now there's immunity and he can do whatever he wants.
Übersetzt das mal selbst kurz.
Ja, wir sind selber damit schon mal in Kontakt geraten, als wir uns das auf EU-Ebene angeschaut haben und festgestellt haben, wenn man sich die Standortverträge der EU-Behörden anschaut, Behörden in Anführungszeichen, wie zum Beispiel der Europäischen Zentralbank, wird man feststellen können, dass auch diese Einrichtungen diplomatische Immunität genießen. Und im Prinzip der Behördenleiter selber darüber entscheiden kann, wem er über was Rechenschaft ablegt. Das kann sich jeder, wenn man ihn denn noch findet, den Standortvertrag, beziehungsweise die Umsetzung ins nationale Recht der Europäischen Zentralbank. Der war mal auf der Homepage der Europäischen Zentralbank zu finden, ist es jetzt nicht mehr. Zumindest ist mein letzter Status. Vielleicht hat sich das inzwischen geändert. Und da kann jeder wortwörtlich nachlesen, dass die Leute, die zum Beispiel bei der Europäischen Zentralbank arbeiten, im Rahmen ihrer Tätigkeit vollkommene diplomatische Immunität genießen. Und es gibt keine, es ist auf europarechtlicher Ebene keinerlei Mechanismus vorgesehen, das ist nicht mehr konzeptuell vorgesehen, wer für die Aufhebung dieser Immunität überhaupt zuständig wäre. Da gibt es überhaupt keinerlei Regularien für. Das kann ja nur die Kommission, der Rat oder der EuGH sein. Nur einer von den dreien kann es machen. Oder die Mitgliedstaaten. Aber wenn die Mitgliedstaaten selber darüber entscheiden könnten, dann wäre die diplomatische Immunität sinnlos.
Also mit anderen Worten, wir sollten uns ganz, ganz genau überlegen, ob wir nicht, sobald wir das hier beendet haben, uns aus all diesen supranationalen Organisationen zurückziehen und deren oder aber deren Macht massiv begrenzen. Denn das, was wir jetzt gerade von Ihnen hören, Frau Stückelberger, es mag zwar out there in the public domain sein, aber die meisten Menschen wissen es nicht. Ich wusste es auch nicht. Ja. Und das, was wir erleben, ist ja genau das, was der Kollege gerade anspricht. Wer so viel Macht hat, der wird sie missbrauchen. Und jemand, der so drauf ist, wie Bill Gates drauf ist, der ist recht und das tut er gerade. Und daher rührt auch dieses Wahnsinnige im wahrsten Sinne des Wortes, Selbstverständnis von wegen, wir werden 7-8 Milliarden Menschen üben und sein Selbstverständnis impfen und sein Selbstverständnis, die glauben, die haben eine Wahl, die haben keine Wahl. Und das alles erzählt so ein Kasper auch noch in 10 Minuten in der Tagesschau, weil Frau Merkel ihm da eine Bühne bereitet im Staatsfernsehen, von uns gebührenfinanzierten Staatsfernsehen. Also Frau Stückelberger, ich bin ein wenig entsetzt, um es mal so zu formulieren, das, was wir heute hier von Frau Behrendt und von Ihnen gehört haben, ist aber andererseits auch ein ganz wichtiger Hebel, mit dem wir arbeiten können in der gerichtlichen Auseinandersetzung. Das muss aber auch in die Öffentlichkeit. All diese Erkenntnisse müssen in die Öffentlichkeit. Wir werden das gleich heute Abend in der Zoom-Konferenz mit den internationalen Kollegen weitergeben, damit das bekannt wird. Ich bin sicher, dass einige der Kollegen das wissen, aber ich glaube, dass diese Kollegen nicht wissen, dass die Öffentlichkeit das nicht weiß. Deswegen immer wieder raus damit, mhm. Ja.
Sehr gut. Yeah, and the extent of this is much bigger because I know also that in Basel, they have the Bank of Settlement.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, a very important organ of this whole.
Yeah, International Bank of, IBS, I think.
Which can take the property away from people or something like that. I'm not a specialist in that. But what I'm saying is that it's not only Gavi, it is a whole system organized. And it's very interesting to look at the historical chronology because in 2009 was the first year of the implementation of this huge health security governance. Mm-hmm. And that's when Bill Gates started to sign things and started moving.
That's how we just learned about these public-private partnerships. I mean, I've known for a long time that this exists, but from what Frau Behrendt told us, it becomes very clear that the private part of this public-private partnership has taken over control. And not only have they taken over control, they're immune from everything. They're not responsible for anything. This has got to stop. We will make this stop.
I'm wondering what is the role of the Secretary General of the United Nations and of the Commission of the Human Rights here?
Yeah.
Because they are very interested. I made a manifesto. I can give it to you from Stockholm. That was the aim, where I'm asking for a survey, an enquête, that they have to go and make order in everything. We have to review everything in the United Nations because the United Nations has been bought into this corporate agency. I have no doubt they have not done anything since the beginning of this COVID.
Yes, I know. Well, we've seen a few statements from individuals that are members of the United Nations or work for the United Nations, which looked encouraging. But you're right. There's nothing, no official action, just like we've seen nothing from the churches. No official action that would have told the population that there is help, that there's another way of doing this, that they would step in to stop the most egregious activities of these criminals. This is a very clear picture now. We're dealing with a bunch of criminals. But we've seen nothing from the United Nations. So that's another one of those organizations which we really seriously have to think about. Do we need them?
They actually are meeting this week until the 31st of March. Mm-hmm. And I would really suggest you write to the high, the Haut Commissaire,
High Commissioner. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, High Commissioner on Human Rights, Bachelet, very quickly.
Das machen wir
and
mit
request
partner.
Really that things move and that lawyers take a hand on this because
we will. We will. We've spoken with human rights lawyers last night, and we're in the process. They prepared something for us, and we just have to read it. We have so much stuff to read.
You saw the statement of the Secretary General that there is massive human rights violation and that the United Nations has to take care of it.
Okay, very good.
He said it last 2 days ago. I've posted it on my Facebook right away. But 50% good, 50% he's promoting the vaccine. So my hypothesis is that he's changing, but he cannot change completely. Otherwise, they will, you know, put him out or something, because he has had a discussion with Pompeo a month ago or 2 months. So there is some signs that he is a good guy, but he cannot move on.
Okay, good to know. Okay, Frau Stückelberger, we are in a little bit of a bind because our next guest has only so much time. Is there something else that we need to know?
I'll tell you very quickly then. I can send you an article from David Fidler, who's a lawyer who has written an article on from International Sanitary Convention to Global Health Security. He was very worried of the international health regulation when he wrote this, saying that it is becoming a global governance. So I think that would clarify some things too. Second is that you have to see very clearly that the change of definitions of two major things in this pandemic that justifies this international emergency declaration from all the countries, you know, is mortality and the number of cases that are sick. But it's not only that. They are taking definitions that they changed in 2009. Two things very important. The pandemic definition has changed from being the number of cases abnormally high in deaths and in disease to, there are diseases that are spreading all over the world. They have changed in 2009.
They took the definition originally existed of three elements. One is that it's a worldwide disease, that there are a high number, and I think what they call it an abnormally or enormous high number of very sick people and an enormously high number of deaths. And they cut out the last two, and now the only requirement is that we have a worldwide disease. Right. That means that any flu can be turned into a pandemic. Actually, any cold can be turned into a pandemic. Yeah.
And it comes from WHO, and it is, I think, when Bill Gates started to change with his crowd, the definitions, what we just talked about, the immunity, everything. And the other one, you know that the immunity, they changed the definition of the immunity, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's now the only immunity is vaccine.
Yeah. Yeah, das ist ganz wichtig. Das wollen wir auch noch mal kurz ansprechen. Die WHO, and this is probably no coincidence, because this happened in 2009. That's when Bill Gates appeared on the picture, right?
Yes, the definition.
The herd immunity is now,
But immunity is very recent.
Yes, but he's still there. Also, die WHO hat in 2009, um die Schweinegrippe zur Pandemie machen zu können, die Definition der Pandemie geändert. Das haben wir schon mal angesprochen hier. Niemand weiß, warum. Das geschah hinter verschlossenen Türen. Bis dahin bestand die Definition aus drei, wir würden sagen, Tatbestandsvoraussetzungen, nämlich erstens ein weltweites Krankheitsgeschehen, das zweitens zu einer Vielzahl von schweren Krankheitsverläufen führt und drittens zu sehr vielen enormously high rate of death, also zu sehr vielen Todesfällen. Plötzlich wurde die Definition abgeändert. Jetzt reicht ein internationales, weltweites Krankheitsgeschehen. Wir brauchen keine schweren Krankheitsverläufe mehr. Wir brauchen keine Vielzahl von Todesfällen mehr, sodass praktisch jede Grippe, ja jede Erkältung zur Pandemie erklärt werden kann. Und das, die zweite Änderung, und das geschah zu einem Zeitpunkt, als Bill Gates plötzlich auf der Platte erschien. Die zweite Änderung ist jetzt passiert. Da wurde die Definition der Herdenimmunität geändert. Herdenimmunität kann rein logisch und wissenschaftlich natürlich dadurch eintreten, dass viele Menschen infiziert wurden. Ich weiß jetzt nicht genau, wie die Prozentzahlen sind, aber wir haben von in diesem Zusammenhang Corona von Mike Yeadon ein bisschen was gehört. Wir haben auch was von von John Ioannidis gehört. Also es reicht wahrscheinlich aus, wenn 15, 20, 25% der Weltbevölkerung schon über, man sagt, Kreuzimmunität verfügen, also schon mal irgendwann in ihrem Leben auf ein anderes Coronavirus gestoßen sind, das dann vom Immunsystem besiegt wurde, dann wird das körpereigene Immunsystem sich an dieses Coronavirus erinnern. Und wenn ein ähnliches Virus, so wie jetzt das angeblich neue, auftaucht, dann kann das körpereigene Immunsystem sich dagegen wehren. Wenn dann zusätzlich, so hat es Mike Yeadon in einem seiner Papers beschrieben und uns auch erklärt, noch dieses neue Coronavirus bei, sagen wir mal, 15 oder 20%, glaube ich, der Bevölkerung angekommen ist, sich also dieser Prozentsatz mit dem neuen angeblichen Virus ebenfalls infiziert hat, dann haben wir Herdenimmunität. Also ich meine, das sind so 50% oder so, wenn man beides zusammennimmt, die alte Kreuzimmunität und die neue Infektionszahl, dann hat man Herdenimmunität. Das bedeutet, dass dann keinerlei Maßnahmen mehr ergriffen werden müssen, weil alles gut ist. Und nun hat die WHO die Definition der Herdenimmunität geändert, das ist jetzt gerade passiert, und hat gesagt, das geht nur noch, das ist nur noch erreichbar durch Impfung. Wobei wir ja alle inzwischen wissen, dass es hier nicht um Impfung geht, sondern um genetische Experimente, weil es eben keine Impfung im klassischen Sinne ist. Und wir wissen inzwischen alle, dass diese Impfung anders als alle anderen vorher, wo es jeweils Studien vorher gegeben hat, keine ordentliche Studie hat. Also wir haben keine Grundlage, um sagen zu können, wie groß, wie schwierig die Nebenwirkungen sein werden. Ganz wichtig. Vielen Dank, Frau Stückelberger.
Ja, and the last small thing, very rapid. You, yeah. Just that you, I'm sure that you saw that WHO has issued twice now, in 7th of December and on 20th of January, medical alert to a product called PCR. It is written in small that it is alert. So it is intentionally criminal to say alert, this PCR doesn't work with the CTs. You have to find the CTs and to not say stop.
I didn't know that.
Oh, okay.
So they have an official alert, meaning you can't use PCR tests to detect infections. And at the same time, they're still pushing the PCR tests as the only means or the best means to detect infections. Yes. That is very interesting to know.
And it's intentional because they say in the recommendation, you have to ask for the CT when you do the PCR. That in fact, I can give you the reference and you can look, because this is a key. They are intentionally putting a small alert. They are delaying the time and they're not saying stop it.
Okay. Wow. Also offiziell warnt die WHO auf der einen Seite davor, diese PCR-Tests in der jetzigen Form jedenfalls als Maßstab, so wie Herr Drosten das mit seinen vorsätzlich falschen Tatsachenbehauptungen in die Welt gesetzt hat, diese PCR-Tests als Maßstab für das Messen von Infektionen zu benutzen. Gleichzeitig pusht sie aber weiterhin den Einsatz dieser PCR-Tests. Man fragt sich, ob da jemand möglicherweise mit gespaltener Zunge redet oder ob das Gehirn nicht ganz funktioniert. Aber diese Fragen stellen wir uns ja schon länger. Okay, I think we pretty much covered everything thus far. We're probably going to meet again, but okay. I'm very grateful for you taking the time and being here with us today. Same with Frau Behrendt. Also ich danke Ihnen beiden, Frau Stückelberger und Frau Behrendt. Das war extrem aufschlussreich in Bereichen, über die wir bisher so nichts wussten.